when they ask me, as a you know expert in this field, they ask me, do we have any need for new medications? I mean, we have now anti-CGRP pathway medications. Didn't we solve the whole problem of migraine? And my answer is no, we didn't. We still have unmet need for new medications. So please keep going and look at this literature, look at our studies. There's, of course, no guarantee that they will work, those targets that we suggested, but at least we can try. And if we're successful, we can expand our armamentarium of medications to our patients, and we can make much more for people with migraine around the world.
For many people with migraine, it can feel like new treatments don't come fast enough. But behind the scenes, science is moving at a remarkable pace, uncovering new targets, new mechanisms, and new hope for those still searching for relief. Today, we're joined by one of the world's leading migraine researchers, Dr. Masoud Ashina, director of the Human Migraine Research Unit in Copenhagen. His groundbreaking work has reshaped what we know about how migraine starts and how to stop it. Together, we'll explore what's next in the migraine treatment pipeline, from the latest drug targets to the breakthroughs that could redefine care in the years ahead. Dr. Ashina, welcome back to the Migraine World Summit.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
I think this is going to be one of our most popular topics because who doesn't want more treatment options? So we have a lot of questions for you today. The first, CGRP medications have been game changers for many people with migraine. What's been the impact, or what's been the biggest impact of these medicines so far?
Those medications are the game changer, because what we are experiencing right now, it's something completely new. We have migraine-specific medications. We have medications, preventive medications, working on specific migraine mechanisms and the anti-CGRP pathway mechanism. After the triptans, migraine-specific acute medications, which we use to treat attacks, to stop, you know, to abort attacks, we didn't have any specific preventive medications. We use non-specific medications with a various degree of success. Some of them working in some patients, some of them not working. But one of the major problems of those medications, adherence and persistence. I mean, poor adherence and poor persistence, plus side effects. You know, and side effects and adherence and persistence, they go together. So that's why when we introduce the new medications, we have a completely new arsenal of medications that we can offer our patients without all these side effects that we experience with the old type of medications, no specific medications. And it is obvious, when you develop something specific for mechanisms, the likelihood that it can cause some side effects is much, much lower. And the likelihood that you have a better adherence and persistence is, of course, much, much higher. That's why the anti-CGRP pathway medications changed completely our clinical practice. But the problem is, Lisa, that even when we treat them and they are successful, you know, in terms of the efficacy, safety, and tolerability, not all patients respond to these medications. Not all patients have an optimal effect. They still have so-called residual migraines. So just one example, clinical example, is that when you have 30 days of migraine and you drop down to the 15 days, yes, it is fantastic. It's a 50% reduction. But you still have a 15 days of your life spending in the bed or in the bad mood and severely affected, disabled during these attacks. So that's why we need to optimize the treatment. We need also to provide patients with the new drug targets, not CGRP-related targets, which can be also used in the clinical practice.
So you find that patients adhere better to how to take the CGRPs. Do you think that's because they were specifically designed for migraine? I know it can be confusing for a patient like me to say, why am I taking a seizure medicine? I don't have seizures.
Yeah, but if we're going back, you know, the history of headache medicine, we see a lot of, let's say, non-specific medications that we use. And they were quite effective. We can't deny that they were not effective. I mean, we had a blood pressure medications. We have anti-epileptic medications primarily used in the clinical practice. Well, at that time, we discovered them by accident. You know, those people who suffered from epilepsy or those people who suffered from the high blood pressure, they were taking these medications and they were experiencing also less migraine attacks. So our discontinuation rate with these old style medications were much, much higher. So, but we use them and they are still using them, you know, our colleagues and patients, and some of them are actually happy using them. And we have to remember also, Lisa, that the world is huge and we are not the only one in the world, you know, who have access to these new medications. A lot of people around the world, they don't have the same access for these medications. And that's why it's important to emphasize that those medications are still very important players in our clinical practice, and our colleagues should continue using them and helping a lot of people with migraine around the world.
What percentage of people respond well to CGRPs, and what do we know about people who don't?
Not everybody is a responder for the anti-CGRP pathway medications. In clinical trials, roughly we see something like between 50, sometimes 60% of people who experience at least 50% reduction in monthly migraine days. But this 50% reduction, as I mentioned before, could be down, you know, from 30 down to 15 days, or from 8 days to 4 days. So approximately, I would say between 50 to 60% of people. In clinical practice, when nothing is like a placebo-controlled status, we see a higher response. You know, we see something like 70% response. But again, it all depends in which clinical practice we are.
Is it common for people, when I started CGRPs, I didn't experience a huge reduction in attack days, but I did experience an extreme reduction in pain and debilitation. Is this common?
Yes, Lisa. When we teach our students and our junior doctors, we usually say the aim of the preventive medications, you know, when we do the prophylactic, we give the preventive medications to people with migraine, is not only reducing the frequency, it is also reducing intensity and also duration of attacks. So it's kind of a multiple effect. And I would say the three outcome measures are very, very important.
Lastly, upon this kind of portion of our interview, are there any biological clues that can help determine who will respond to CGRPs, or you just have to kind of try it to figure out if it's going to work for you?
Well, for now, it is utopia, I would say. You know, many, many companies, when they presented the data of efficacy of anti-CGRP pathway medications, they tried to look whether there are any signs, anything in the patient's so-called phenotype, you know, the different symptoms, you know, some of them have, one-sided headache, some of them, they experience nausea, some of them more phonophobia or photophobia. They looked at everything, you know, and they couldn't find anything which can predict the effect of the medication. And in fact, that even if you find something, you will always find something on the big population, right, basis. This means that even if I find something suggesting something, I cannot deny your treatment because you are not in this population, if you understand what I mean.
So moving towards the future and away from CGRPs and what's next, your team has identified several new molecules. I think we call it PACAP, adrenomedulin, and amylin that can trigger migraine attacks. How might future treatments blocking these differ from CGRP inhibitors?
How we come to this idea is that those molecules are very important and they are widely distributed in all so-called migraine anatomical structures. We call it trigeminal vascular system. So it's a system consisting of the blood vessels, the trigeminal nerve, which is responsible for our pain sensation, and brain. So just imagine that CGRP is one family and PACAP is another family. And this family of peptides, or proteins, or the molecules, they can bind to the different receptors, not the same receptors. So now we know that the CGRP can provoke migraine attacks. This has been studied, and the multiple studies quite reproducible that it can induce migraine attacks up to the 70% of people. And we know that by blocking CGRP or its receptor, we can treat migraine attacks. This, okay. But CGRP not alone in this family. CGRP has also some siblings, amylin and adrenomedulin. Some of them, they cross in a way that they can share the doors, the receptors. But some of them, no, they are kind of their own doors, right? So we gave adrenomedulin and amylin to people with migraine, and we provoked migraine attacks, suggesting that those molecules can be also involved in generating migraine attacks. And thereby, we can speculate that medications working on those molecules can be efficacious, you know, as a new drug targets, okay, for migraine prevention or acute treatment. So this is amylin and adrenomedulin. And also mentioned another family. It's a PACAP family. In this family, we have two peptides being studied in migraine. One is a PACAP, pituitary adenylate cyclase polypeptide. It's a 5 letters PACAP. And another one is VIP, but it's not because it is important person. It is a vasoactive intestinal polypeptide. So these two peptides, they are also siblings, like I told you before about CGRP, amylin, and adrenomedulin. And they have their own receptors, own doors they go and open. When we give these molecules to people with migraine, we can actually induce migraine attacks. And PACAP is specifically studied in terms of, let's say, it's some similarities with the CGRP because it's a very strong vasodilator. So it dilates the vessels, the cranial vessels in the cranial region that we have. And it's similar to CGRP in early studies we published back in 2009, show that it induces migraine attack. If you give it to just people without any history of migraine, and you provoke a little, you know, mild headache and also very strong dilation of the vessels in the cranial region, you can, in fact, completely block this response, the vessel response, and you can reduce the head pain. With this study, we went to another study we published last year, a so-called proof of concept study, in which anti-PACAP medication, monoclonal antibody, was tested in people with migraine. In episodic and chronic, the whole spectrum, including in people who failed, you know, at least for 2 medications before, max 4. So difficult to treat people, the whole spectrum with migraine. And we showed that in this study that it has some effect. It had some effect, okay? But this is a small study, the first step. Now the phase 2B study is ongoing, and hopefully, if it's still positive, we will move to the phase 3, and maybe in 2-3 years, we have another medication, which completely different class of medication. What will follow after the anti-PACAP medications? We don't know. It all depends on the interest from the pharma, from the industry, to develop the new drug targets. And when they ask me, as a you know expert in this field, they ask me, do we have any need for new medications? I mean, we have now anti-CGRP pathway medications. Didn't we solve the whole problem of migraine? And my answer is no, we didn't. We still have unmet need for new medications. So please keep going and look at this literature, look at our studies. There's, of course, no guarantee that they will work, those targets that we suggested, but at least we can try. And if we're successful, we can expand our armamentarium of medications to our patients, and we can make much more for people with migraine around the world.
You don't have to take it in all at once. You can return to extended interviews at your own pace with the All Access Pass.
I'm speechless because you've covered so many great points in your response, and I want to make sure that our audience caught all of them. So currently how you're studying new breakthroughs in migraine medicine is you get volunteers and you inject them with some sort of molecule or antagonist that you know or that you think will trigger an attack. And then you can study in real time what is happening in a migraine body. And that leads to new discoveries and possibly new treatments down the road.
You know, we have a fantastic, brave patients coming and suggesting, and saying that, well, we are ready, to sacrifice for science, basically. And they know that, of course, it's not dangerous because it's a natural occurring molecules that they have in their body. But of course, during this experimental setup, we are infusing the, let's say, higher concentration of these molecules that they'd usually expect. I can give you one example. One of the robust triggers of migraine attacks, it is a widely used medication for the different thing.
Really?
If I take people with migraine and I will give them, let's say, 20 people or 50 people, 100 people, and if I give them a tablet of Viagra in the double-blind study, so they will come twice in the very random order, okay? And they will receive either placebo, you know, the tablet without nothing, or they will receive Viagra. And if I do randomization and they come back and I collect the diaries, 80% of them will report migraine attacks.
In any of your provocation studies, do you test these molecules or drugs on people who don't have headache or migraine to see if it triggers attacks on them as well?
So this is the beauty of these experimental models, Lisa. Now I'm getting more and more excited, right? So if you take 100 people without any history of migraine, no family history of migraine, and 100 people with migraine, you know, clear-cut migraine diagnosis. If you give the same drugs or the same substances to these 100 people, all of them, almost all of them, will report some kind of head pain, very transient, you know, 1 hour, and it will go away. Not even need a treatment, not even need a Tylenol, acetaminophen, nothing. And also get immediate dilation of the vessels because all of them are dilating the vessels, all these substances, and that's it. But those 100 with a history of migraine, with a diagnosis of migraine, almost 80% of them will go on and develop migraine attacks. So why people without migraine, let's say, genetics, without migraine diagnosis, only transient, very mild head pain and goes away, and in people with migraine, it evolves to the full-blown migraine attack? This is a main question in science that we have. What is really starts, how it starts, how it evolves, another fascinating question. Why it stops.
So we know that CGRP and GPANTS affect one group of pain fibers, and Botox affects a different group of pain fibers. Can you explain in simple terms what these different pathways mean for treatment?
We have to remember that when we talk about the pain fibers, we have to ask the question where those pain fibers are located in the cranial region. Brain itself, Lisa, it's indolent, okay? I mean, there is no pain sensation in the brain. The structure surrounding the brain, particularly this so-called, you know, dura, which is a meninges, we call it also. It's a plastic bag surrounding the brain, very thin one, which protects you. And if there is infection in this particular compartment, it can cause a very serious condition called meningitis. I don't know if you heard about the meningitis. It's a dangerous condition. And guess what? When the people get meningitis, they complain of what? They complain of head pain. They complain of sensitivity for light, increased sensitivity for light, increased sensitivity for sound, nausea, sometimes vomiting, all the symptoms.
Very familiar. I'm very familiar with these. Yes.
Yes, yes. And it could be viral meningitis. It could be bacterial meningitis. So my point is that these pain fibers are specifically in this region and also surrounding our vessels. Now how this vessel signaling transforms, into the
pain signaling, this is a main question that I have in my scientific work. And what we know that these pain fibers, there are two types of pain fibers. One are transmitting slowly and one transmitting fast. Some of them responsible for more tonic pain, you know, dull pain, some of them sharp pain. But they are kind of involved in the migraine, you know, mechanisms. And some of the experiments conducted in Boston in Professor Rami Bernstein's lab, they showed that apparently these medications that work on anti-CGRP medications, they work on the one particular so-called A-delta fibers. And another medications used in clinical practice to treat or to actually prevent migraine attacks, Botox, on a botulinum toxin, it works on the C fibers. So, but we have, with all, let's say, respect for this very solid preclinical studies, we have to remember that in clinical practice, when we start talking to patients, it could be a huge variation there, okay, in terms of efficacy of one, another one. And the idea is that also with this rationale suggests that maybe combination treatments can be also option. Well, it's very plausible, but for the combination treatment is better than one treatment, you need to conduct a proper randomized study to show this effect. Because otherwise, we can keep treating the people with the different combinations without any good proofs that these different combinations are in fact effective compared to the one medication.
So when you say combination, do you mean taking two different meds and delivering them, you know, combining them, calling them a new name, and delivering it as one pill or one injection? Or do you mean like layering treatments? Like I take a CGRP, but I also take Botox.
The only way that we usually do here, at least in our clinical practice here in Denmark, we can combine the medications if there is any comorbidities, you know, the conditions that we know that they can be also treated with the anti-migraine medications, we can add these medications there. But doing that just like that, it is perfectly okay with me if my colleagues are doing so. I am just raising the question. If you do so, if you have a trial showing that the together is better than the one, then it's okay with me. But if it's not, I just raise the question. But I have, as I said, I have a huge respect for my colleagues trying to help my patients and trying to do. The only thing that my limit goes there, if we're talking about opioids, which I'm completely against, you know, any kind of combinations, I don't want them in the practice, in migraine practice.
Are there new pain signaling routes that are being discovered that could lead to future drugs or devices? Or we still think it's pretty much this A, you know, A and B? Is there a C, D, E, F of pain routes?
No, I mean, we have a pharmacological, treatment with the different medications, and hopefully that we will have anti-PACAP medications in the future. For the neuromodulation, for the different type of treatment approaches, we don't have any new stuff.
Which new migraine treatments are now in advanced clinical trials?
Anti-PACAP, I would say, yeah, it all depends what you call advanced. It's, as I said, it's a phase 2B. And if 2B is successful, then there will be a phase 3. And then in 2-3 years, we will have a new class of medication. This is at least what we know. Another is also a part 2 antagonist or antibodies against the one specific receptors. Those are also now... testing, it is a phase 2 status, so it's a kind of proof of concept status. And if it's also successful, it would also lead to the next stage, you know, 2B and phase 3 status. This is a different receptor antibody, receptor specifically also dealing with the pain sensation in this trigeminal vascular system.
how close are we to identifying biomarkers or genetic markers that can guide therapy choices?
I mean, it's a fascinating topic, and it's interesting to study all these substances measuring in the saliva, in the blood, in the different compartments. Nothing wrong about that. It's interesting in terms of studying migraine mechanisms and to understand the migraine. But translating that into clinical practice, you know, by taking the sample, predicting the effect, combination, whatever, we are not there. And genetics are much more complex because the migraine is not a one gene disease, at least the common type of migraine. It's a multifactorial, it's a polygenic. And that's why we don't have a single one that we can use to predict anything. So the best thing that we can do now, and we are very fortunate, and we have to be very happy about that, we have our classification. And using the classification, we can diagnose migraine the same way in US, in Denmark, in China, in Africa, Australia, in Latin America, everywhere, and we can offer them what we have now. This is fantastic that we have this. So this is the best biomarker, I would say, that you have. So not denying the people based on something, on the test or something, but just saying that you have a diagnosis, you have a chance, let's say at least 50 to 60% to respond. Okay, try that. Effective, fine. Not effective, maybe we should wait longer. Not effective, we should search for more other medications.
For those who are watching today and they're waiting for that next big breakthrough, what would you say to them to stay hopeful and engaged in their care plan?
In spite of this great access that we have, at least in our part of the world, we still have many people underdiagnosed and undertreated. So this is important because we need patients, we need people with migraine engaged in this process and actually go and seek actively, proactively for help, because there are a lot of opportunities now, okay? We have this good medications, okay, not working in everybody, but still very good, efficacious, well-tolerated new medications for prevention, and we should use that. Can you believe that 30 years passed since we introduced the triptans? We still have people never tried triptans. We still have people tried only one triptan. Even we know that the one triptan trial is not sufficient. You need to try two, three triptans until you find the right one individual for you.
Should patients consider joining a clinical trial? And if they're interested in joining one, what's the best way to find a trial that's right for them?
Yeah, it's very different from country to country. I don't know. It's extremely important that the patients participate in clinical trials. Because without clinical trials, we will never understand that. One of the best things that happened in our field is that we have a classification. We can diagnose the migraine, and it's pretty homogeneous in this context. Okay, so meaning that including patients in US, including patients in France, in Germany, in other countries around the world, we include the same type of patients. And by including this type, this provides us a basis to study the migraine. And when we do the clinical trials and we can show that the medications are working, we show that it's not working only on patients, let's say, frequency, intensity, and duration of attack, but also on the quality of life, we can actually prove that the migraine, it's not just a headache. It's a very complex disorder or disease associated with a specific biology for this condition. And when you have a specific mechanisms, you can develop a specific drugs acting on those mechanisms.
Where can we learn more about what you're doing and follow your work?
The good news is that I received one of the major grants in Denmark from the Danish Research National Foundation. The Center of Excellence was inaugurated at September 1st, Center for Discoveries in Migraine. We're going to have our website very soon, hopefully, and we will post all new research that we do, but usually I post that in X, former Twitter, or I do it also in LinkedIn. For the people with migraine, we created a nice website under the umbrella of the National Knowledge Center for Headache Disorders, which I initiated in 2018. And it is financed by the Danish government. And it provides, the aim of this organization is to provide all information for patients, for people suffering from migraine, for their relatives, but also for other stakeholders that are interested in that. But it's in Danish. And there they can also read the newsletters about everything what's going on, specifically in Denmark, but also outside of the world, if it's something of interest for patients. And but for the research part, we will have our website specific for that.
Thank you so much again for your time today, Dr. Ishina. It was an absolute pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.